I've seen a lot of change, been through a lot of pain. Some things are not the same as they were a year ago, but all will be okay. I move on each and every day. The past is where it stays, way back a year ago.
Welcome back, guys, to Wake and Make. Super excited for this week's co-host. Good friend of mine, one of my favorite people in the whole world. I say that about every guest, but it's always true, so I'm not lying. This week's co-host is Jen Larson from Tilt Leather. One interesting fact that people don't know about her, and we're going to start with, is she's actually Dolly Parton's adopted niece, which I think is awesome. Welcome, Jen. Welcome
Thank
in.
Thank you. Thank you. Hi, everyone. And I have a surprise for you, Dennis.
What's that?
Dolly Parton is here.
Oh, she is?
I just wanted to say hello. Yeah, come on in, Dolly.
Come in, Dolly. Every time that I see your work or anything that you post, I immediately think Dolly Parton. And I always send your, I copy your link for your Instagram and send it to my friends that are big Dolly Parton fans. And I'm always like, dude, you gotta check out this lady's stuff. And they're always so impressed. So I think it's awesome. Yeah, of course. How have you been? We had you on Monday Motivation a while back. And like promised, I told you I wanted to have you back on. Now we've graduated to the major league. You had to be one of the first people that we brought on.
I am so honored, honestly. That was such a fun conversation the first time around. And now we're best friends.
We are besties.
Things are good. Things are good. I'm just, riding those waves. Sometimes you're on top of the wave. Sometimes you're crashing to the shore. But and then you paddle back out. Yeah, exactly. But things are good. Things are good. I feel like I'm on a good roll right now. I'm really happy with the things that I've been producing and the skills I keep building on. So, things are good. Weather's better. That always makes me feel great.
Absolutely. It's kind of always rainy up in the Bay Area. It's always got some kind of moisture in the air, right?
A little bit. I'm like north of San Francisco. I'm in the exotic lands of Vallejo, California. And things are just a little bit warmer here. We're still by the bay, but we don't get that socked in fog that San Francisco gets. Thank goodness.
You're in the land of E40 Fonzarelli, right?
That's right. Yeah.
I'm a huge, huge fan of Bay Area hip hop, and I try to reference it as much as I can. A lot of my quips or one-liners come from Bay Area music. I lived in Antioch, Brentwood, Oakley area, which is the armpit of the Bay, the Delta area. And it's I always tell people, if San Francisco is Los Angeles, Antioch is the San Bernardino of Southern California. It's just, man, it is horrible there. But I was close enough to the cool spots. I loved hanging out in Berkeley and the great restaurants, and I love the Bay Area.
I do too. I've been living here. Well, I grew up in Gilroy, which is south. You can't even call it South Bay. It's south of San Francisco, but always was driving up to the Bay Area and had relatives up here. I totally love it. But I have to say, I love going to the Delta. I'm not sure if I would want to live there, but I do love visiting. It is a place on its own. It's it's interesting.
You ever been to Bethel Island, AKA Methel Island? That place is all tweakers.
It sounds so familiar. Now I don't know. Cause we just take these excursions. We love a Sunday drive, my husband and I, and we'll just go and explore the Delta. Is Bethel Island the one that you have to take the car ferry to?
No, there's a bridge. But I guess it just depends on which way you come from. I get the vibes out there. Oh, yeah. And I loved it. I still have great friends. I love to go visit. Like, I I would never live there again, though. I'll just say it that way. Like, it is,
yeah,
that place is,
I hear you.
After 5 years living there, it was, I tried to spend as much time as I could in like Berkeley and Oakland, and that was more my tempo. Yeah, a little bit more diverse of an area for sure. And that's kind of so I wanted to jump in. Last time that we had an opportunity to talk, it led to the cutest thing ever, your dad just being like such a huge fan of yours, and which I just think is the most adorable thing ever. And even kind of researching this episode, I see how much your family has been so important to your creative endeavors. Can you get more into that? Because I think you have a pretty unique situation that not everyone has. And I just think it's so charming, and I think it's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, getting back in the Wayback Machine, I'm most definitely influenced and been encouraged from a really early age to just create. Not even encouraged, it was just there. So a lot of the sewing skills and a lot of the creativities come from my family. My mom, you know, I grew up in the 70s and we had three channels. Like, TV was not like it is today, right? With all this cable and business. And so and we lived in the country, and there really wasn't, TV just wasn't the thing to do. So my mom, we always had craft projects to do. My mom did clay work. Both of my grandmothers were excellent seamstresses, very creative. My great aunts did what we'd call old lady crafts now. So like beaded flowers and pipe cleaners and, you know, weird dolls. I mean, and there was always like a box full of like sparkly beads. And I really credit that to my interest in crafting. And so I was always doing something. My dad and my uncle draw really wonderfully. I mean, just like, I go down the line and I can see where I was influenced by my family. So it was just kind of always there. And I just really loved making things. Always, always. Camping trips, I'd bring along my little braided like barrettes, you know, like ribbon barrettes. I mean, I know someone out there is going to remember these braided ribbon barrettes, and they would hang down. You'd have like a little ribbon here. So yeah, so I just always grew up with that. They were my influences and my teachers. And then my family's just super supportive. They're supportive of whatever we want. They just would always say, we want you to be happy. And that's amazing. You know, they've supported us through highs and lows, and dance classes and piano lessons and all of these things. So, and they're just very involved. They live, you know, it's still in Gilroy, it's where my parents are. So it's really only like an hour and a half away from here. And they come to our parties. I see them on holidays all the time, and they're just super supportive. My dad has really taken to Instagram and like the internet, you know, he loves to be in touch in that way. So he's always seeing what I'm doing. My mom is more dips in. She likes to have a phone call about what's going on.
It always seems to be the parents, like one of them is really in tuned to like modern technology. And the other one is like, I'm not going to learn anything new. I just refuse to learn how to even text message you. So call me or send me a homing pigeon, and that's how we're going to communicate, or nothing. And I just love the reaction. Like, one of the highlights of the previous podcast, the Monday Motivation, one of the things that I'll remember years and years to come was just how the reaction from your dad and how supportive he was. And to be honest, it probably makes me not jealous in a negative way. I love to see parents supporting their children at any age, whether it's 2 years old or it's, you know, into their, what, you're 28. So into their late 20s, you know?
I mean, I know that you said that you don't have kids yet. You guys would like to have a family. I don't have children. And I think that like, parents probably never make that separation of like, we're still always going to be their children, right? No matter how old we get, even when I'm 60, they're going to be like, Look at what my daughter is doing. Isn't it cool?
Yeah, I think that that's it. Even as like an adult now, I think that our parents are that way, right? Like even when I see my friends and the way that their parents treat them, and it's cringy sometimes, and you're like, I'm an adult, like don't talk to me like a child. But even everything in my mindset right now is preparing to be a father. We haven't had a kid, but like I have like a million different nicknames for a kid that hasn't even been made yet. Like I've been thinking about this so in depth, the conversations that I plan to have at every different stage of their life. And so I can only imagine when they're just because they turn 18 doesn't mean that I'm not gonna like care. So it makes me have a different perspective on the way that my parents kind of interact with me. Like it's their job to care, and it's their job to be concerned, I guess.
Sure. Yeah, totally. And then really appreciate the my parents being so not just encouraging, but just being so active in my world, you know, like they really are interested in what I'm doing. And it's a great feeling. It's nice. Thanks, Mom and Dad. They'll be watching.
I know they will. That's why I wanted to make a whole thing about them, just so that when they listen to this podcast, they know I'm a fan of them, and we're talking about them in the best way possible.
Hey, Phil and Kathy, shout yeah. out.
Shout out. Got it. Hi, Mom. Look at me.
No hands.
No hands. I love it. So to kind of go full circle, and you know, you at a young age, you were really inspired by your family, and they taught you a lot about being a maker, about making things, crafts, and tinkering with things. And now you're into education. You take private courses. You've worked with different groups within the Bay Area. Can you tell me a little bit more about your experience as an educator and how it's benefited your life and the struggles? Because I think a lot of listeners we talk about the educational side of the maker community. So I also do a lot of teaching, and I also am an advocate for people to teach while they're learning. I think it's the best way to learn is to teach others. But I would love to hear your take on being an educator in the maker space.
For sure. I'll just say this up front is that I think that deciding that I was going to teach and actually use my words to show people how to, you know, work with leather or whatever, it made me a better maker, because you have to have a super strong grasp and be able to explain it to people in a palatable way. And so it actually made me think of every single step along the way in a much more focused way than I ever had when I was just making on my own and not thinking about teaching. So teaching made me a better maker. So I think that tags along with what you were saying, is that it's an important step. Not everyone is going to teach, but I think it just puts a hyper focus on what you're doing. But my journey, well, first of all, I thought I was going to be a teacher in the educational system, but it didn't speak to me.
You would have been a fantastic teacher. I just know I would have.
I mean, I love kids. I was going to teach elementary school. I come from a family of teachers as well, and I thought that was going to be my path, but there was just something, I mean, I just had to be creative. That's basically what it came down to. I always wanted to do something creative, but I never thought that was an option for me. You know, I thought I had to go down these certain routes because that's how, you know, things were set up in school. You have these certain career paths and that's what you go on, but nothing was like, it wasn't pulling me. So anyway, I thought I was going to be a teacher anyway, but then I decided I would put my big girl pants on, jump off the cliff and try to be a maker in some sort of capacity that brought me some income. Anyway, I found leather work. It really spoke to me. I have, like I've said, I've always been crafty, but once I found leather work, I just fell in love with the medium. And I started teaching myself from YouTube videos, old leatherworking manuals from Tandy, watching people, just observing trial and error and all that. But I couldn't really find anyone to teach me in person when I was learning, not in my area, at least. It was either like I could take a few basic classes at Tandy, which was great, but I wanted more. And I wanted in-person private classes, really is what I wanted. I wanted one-on-one. Or I found these insane courses that were thousands and thousands of dollars and weren't really what I was going for. Like, I don't want to make a Gucci bag or whatever, you know? So I couldn't find anything in between there. So once I started teaching myself and I was getting more and more comfortable and I felt like I had a good grasp on the basics of leatherworking, I went out and I contacted actually just one studio, Workshop SF, that I'd known about for years. That's, you know, was like a studio space where it's super casual and really fun. They played rock and roll music. They put records on. You could, you know, their motto was drink beer, make stuff. And I was like, these are my people. And I was so scared for the longest time to reach out to them and ask if I could teach a class there. And once I finally did, they were like, yes, like so excited about it. And they're still like my family. I love them. They've really fostered me, but I digress. I get sidetracked. I start to talk too much, but so I contacted them and I started teaching basic leatherworking classes and it was a freaking blast. And like I said, it made me a better maker. I had my first few classes, they were not a disaster at all, but it's so different talking about what you're doing, making it palatable and understandable and exciting for people to keep them engaged. I quickly learned that people weren't interested in really like the skill sets. They just wanted to make a cool project. So I had to like figure that out. I don't know if you've experienced that at all.
It's so interesting that you say that. So everything that you just described, I feel is 100% parallel. And we'll get into your private courses too, but I want to touch on this in the sense that what you said at the beginning, where you're describing how much better of a maker it makes you to teach, because you have to think kind of linear. So you think, okay, this step leads to this step that leads to this step. And that's something I didn't think about. And teaching it the first few times, knowing that I had to, teaching is different than making. So you have to really, really, like you said, plan everything out. After doing the first few through Tandy in LA, I learned really quickly and it dramatically improved my workflow, which is one of the things that I realized is when I did things more in an order, I'm spending less time in my shop looking around or moving around to do the next thing. It makes everything more like a timeline, like you're moving forward from one thing to the next, because that's the way that you have to teach it, which I think is such a huge part of the beginning of what you just said. Then as far as, you know, the next steps, teaching in front of people, it's really scary because we all as makers, in my experience, the people I have these discussions with, we all have a sense of like Stockholm syndrome where we don't think we're as good as we are. So we feel that we're not in the place to teach others. And I couldn't, after doing it as long as I have, and I'm sure you would agree with this, is that we are worthy to teach at any level. If you know how to, if you see improvement in the most simplest thing, like how to trace patterns, the quickest way for you to get better at tracing patterns is showing someone the process that got you even slightly better and the mistakes that you made in that process, because you're less likely to keep making those mistakes if you say it out loud and show someone else your mistakes. And I think that it's so interesting. It's 100% parallel to what it is that you've done. And I think that, man, it's so exciting to do education, to see that spark in people, right? Like to see that they caught the bug. Like what you said, when you came into leather work, all of a sudden you're like, this is it. I think they put chemicals in leather to get us addicted by just the smell of leather.
Agreed. Yeah. I had something very clever to say. The spark. Yes. So we're like on an island when we're making, right, in our studios. For the most part, we're alone. And I didn't realize how much I needed to be in a community or actually just need interactions from other people. And so to teach and to get people excited about leather work, or even if it was just they're excited about coming home with a project that they made with their own two hands, was totally thrilling to me and made me feel like I was on top of the world. Like, I helped you do that. I said it with my own words. I constructed this class and you're going home super stoked right now. In fact, you want to come back and make another something, you know? So that was thrilling to me. And I wouldn't trade it for the world. Yeah, that was super cool. Also, being in the Bay Area, there's a lot of people that were taking our classes that were in the tech industry who don't think that they're creative. I had this is one aspect of teaching that I really loved, is the people who came in kind of like, I don't know, I don't have a creative bone in my body, not super excited, maybe even a little nervous to get started. They were always the people that I kind of had to shoo out of the class at the end, because they were so excited that they were doing this thing. They were just happy about what they were doing. They felt creative. So that's awesome. And I miss it. I do miss it, just because of the pandemic, right? I haven't really been able to have those.
It's really rewarding when you get to share something that you love with somebody else. And I think that it's really interesting, because what you said about people want to leave with a product, like, that's what I took away from what you were saying. And that's so true. And that's something that I learned really, really quickly. So anyone that's listening to this, that is going down the educational pathway, is if you can provide a lesson to someone that you're able to start and finish and they leave with a product, you're golden. That's a major thing, whether I'm doing it through teaching courses in Tandy, or I'm doing things here within my studio space. People want to leave with a physical object, not just the skill, but they want to leave. I've done, you know, passport wallets. I've done lots of different things, but those people want to leave with something. And that, to me, was, I'm grateful that I learned that really early in my educational experience, because if not, people come in and they're like, oh, I want to learn how to do saddle stitching better. Okay, then you teach them and then they leave with just a piece of leather that has a bunch of saddle stitching on it. That's not good enough. So you need to create a project that they're able to do quickly. With, or whatever, it doesn't have to be quickly, it depends on whatever the time frame you guys agreed on, then that they have something that they can use and they can show off to their friends and their family and post on the internet, because that's walking advertisement for your educational business as well.
For sure. And it keeps them coming back and interested in learning more. I had a lot of people who came back to learn different projects. There are some people who they were one and done. It's not that they didn't enjoy themselves, but then some people really did get bit by the bug. So they would come back to make another project that learned that they were learning a different skill. But I learned early on as well. It's project based, right? But it's a challenge, as I'm sure you will know, to leather work takes a long time. And so to figure out a project that they can learn a different skill set, but still go home with something in 3 to 4, sometimes I had a 6-hour weekend workshop, but never did I split it up, because it's really hard to get people to come back, you know, and they want that satisfaction of that project. But it was also a super fun challenge. Like, okay, what can I do within this skill set? I have a super cool project that a wide swath of people are going to be into. It was fun. It was a challenge.
I think that you touched on a point too, as far as, because this podcast, we're going to discuss things that are difficult at sometimes, and money seems to be the most difficult thing to discuss. And what you said about, if you can do two paths, the way that you did it, Jen, where you put everything in one course and that's it. I've done extended like week after week courses through Tandy. Get the money first. Like, you have to, because you could start a course with 6 people the first week and they show up. The second week you have 4 people, And then the third week you have two people, then you're lucky. Like, and it's I don't know what that is. That's not for me to psychoanalyze why. Maybe something came up, but that's irrelevant. Or they miss a week and they come back and they're a week behind and you're working just with them. That's not a good thing. So it's a lot better. And you don't get paid. Like, make sure that the course is paid for and full when you start based on who's there, if you're doing a group setting. And for me, something that I learned, this happened the very first time that I took a private course on, like, I had somebody drive down from San Francisco and I booked out 2 days where I moved my whole schedule, appointments that I had, like meetings that I had, made sure that they were taken care of. In the morning of, they text me and said, "Hey, I'm not going to be able to make it. We're going to have to reschedule to next week." And I'm like, dude, so I take a deposit, like a quarter of the price of the deposit for private courses. And if they don't make it, they don't make it. But that's also something I should have known coming from the tattoo world. Like, if I'm going to X out time in my schedule, there's value to that, even if they don't show up. So when people put up a large sum of money, they're a lot more motivated to show up to their obligations. And so I ended up doing that. The person that came down totally understood. We had a mature conversation and something did come up. Like, it's no hard feelings. And he ended up coming and now we're great friends and we have a real relationship based off of that. And I extend my education even after they leave, like, "Hey, can you help me with this?" Or I just recently sent him patterns. Like, I just send them out to him, you know. And once I work with someone one time, I do my best to maintain relationships with those people. Even if it doesn't land another like teaching opportunity, I still make friends. You're in an intimate setting. In that case, it was like 2 6-hour days or something like that, where we were here and like we're eating together and like you talk about personal things. You're forced to talk about personal things and you're in a tight area and you get to know what this person's quirks are and how each person is different to work with. Some people need time to make a mistake. Some people want you hovering over them so that you're on top of everything that they do. You have to like adapt your teaching style as quickly as possible.
For sure, for each individual. So it's interesting because you've taught group workshops as well, and then you do your private lessons. And I'm curious, so I do that as well. And I love them both for different reasons. I don't know if I could choose which one I like over the other, but for the private one-on-one lessons, it's very interesting. Like, I'm inviting them literally into my home, right? And it's usually at least 4 hours, if not six, or you're spending practically the whole day with this person. So like, you know, your social skills have to be on point. You have to make them feel comfortable. And you're really dealing one-on-one with that personality. So you've got to adjust yourself in that way, as well as hyper-focus on everything that they're doing. How are they holding that tool? So I do really love that one-on-one, like, intense learning. But boy, it's exhausting at the end of the day. You're like, I feel so drained from it in a good way. It's just like, it's so much talking. And
I tell my fiance immediately, like, when I know that I have a private course, or even like recording these podcasts, like, I'm recording too. Like, there's times that I bank them and I try to be ahead of the curve, but like, whenever that happens, I'm like, "Hey, after I'm done with this, like, don't take anything personal, but I don't want to talk." Like, I've done all of my explaining for the day and I'm tapped out when I'm done. And me and her communicate really well together and we're very similar in that sense. She's a teacher. So we don't want to go over every single little detail. And what you're saying about like private courses, it's so true. You have, in the same situation, I have people in my home and you're not just teaching them, but you're hosting them. "Hey, do you need coffee? Do you need water? You want to make them feel as comfortable as possible." And something that I want to touch bases on, you said at least 4 hours, sometimes six, sometimes more. That is something that you have to be really stern on. I think that having a 4-hour minimum for people to come into your home and learn anything, it's not that we're trying to drain you out of your pocketbook for me, it's that you think something is going to take a X amount of time, and it never does. And that's the reason why we're the educators, right? Like, we know what it's going to take. And some people learn faster and some people learn slower, but we're trying to get through the whole lesson within those amount of hours. So that kind of talk prior to setting up something can be really difficult, because I'm real staunch on, like, okay, it's a 4-hour minimum. And they're like, oh, well, it should only take two hours. And I'm like, but that's the reason why you're coming to me to learn, is because you don't know how long it's going to take. It's like when I tattooed and people would tell me what the price of the tattoo should be based off of what they think it should be. And I'm like, but it's going to take longer. And there's more that goes into it than you think. And that's the reason why we're the professionals and you're the client, right?
And I also learned, I was pricing it per project rather than, and then giving like an hour, a time limit, saying like, this is a 2 to 3 hour project. But I quickly learned that there was a wide swath of, like, you know, people might sew faster, or it takes them longer to learn such and such. And then it would totally eat into my day, where I then, you know, after they leave, like, I still have to get back to work. And then I would just feel like, okay, I just barely made any money, right? And now I'm super behind on what I need to be doing. So now I charge an hourly rate, but I give them a timeline, and that's just how I have to work it now. You know, it just, you just have to make sure that it's making sense for you as well.
I think that's a lesson that people can learn from this, is that you have to make it work for yourself. I'd rather tell somebody that it's going to take 4 or 5 hours, or let them book and then just be like, either it's going to take less and I charge them less, or it will take longer. And once we get to that 4-hour time period, I can be like, hey, we're at 4 hours. Do you want to continue? And leave it up to them. And just the most important thing when you're doing private courses specifically, because you're in control. A lot of times when you do group courses that are through a different company, with me, it's Tandy, with you, it's, what's the name of it?
Workshop SF.
Workshop SF. So you're kind of under their banner, and they're there to host, you're there to educate. So it's a little bit different of a scenario, but specifically when it comes to doing private courses, being transparent and communicating with a pure heart is the most important. I'd way rather overshoot what I think it's going to be than charge them less, than undershoot and then be like, hey, you know what? Like, it's actually going to be more. Then no one likes that. People always want it to be less. So that's the way that I would suggest people doing private courses.
For sure. And, you know, it's trial and error, and don't worry about changing your format, changing your pricing. I mean, I used to get really uptight about that and just be like, oh, I'm going to lose a fan base or whatever. But what I was losing actually was my tail because I want to give people a great experience. I want everyone to be happy, but it was to my own detriment. I was just like, what? This isn't making monetary sense for me. And let's face it, like, I'm trying to make this a career for myself. You know, I'm not trying to be grubby about it or anything, but, you know, gotta survive. So I would, you know, don't worry about changing the format and making it work for both you and your students. It's a lot. I'm still always changing, trying to figure out, you know, what works best. And sometimes your models have to change a lot.
Well, also understanding that is super key. You don't have to apologize. You're creating a service for people. And if you're transparent and you don't spring an extra cost at the end, they can pick and choose. Like, hey, this doesn't fit in my budget. There's so many times, whether it's with my products or my education, they'll be super interested, but then there's always but I'm on a fixed income, or but my grandma is about to pass away, or but like this. And I'm like, well, I'm really sorry to hear about that. Like, I'm not like a malicious, like, no soul type of person. But at the end of the day, like, I wouldn't go to a Mercedes dealership and be like, hey, like, I really, really want a Mercedes, but I can only afford a Honda Civic. Like, the Mercedes dealership isn't going to be like, oh, well, I'm sorry that you're on a fixed income. Here, let me get you into an E-Class. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not, that's not how it works. And people need to, like, they don't need to learn. People just prioritize things. And I can decide, I can pick and choose just as well as you can and just as well as the listeners where we can create discounts or hook people up. There's a young lady that reached out to me, and she did not include in her story in conversation when we were working out the project that we were doing. She didn't tell me that she's like a young student or all of the things that kind of go, that kind of go into that. She just said, hey, I want to get this project done for my dad. He loves these two dogs. They just recently passed. I want to get them on a wallet. Is it going to cost extra to put both of these portraits on one wallet? And I'm like, not for you, because you're doing something kind for your dad. Let me hook you up. But she didn't come at me with like, hey, I want a discount, because it will always be no.
Right. I mean, that's the beauty of being your own boss. You can do whatever you feel is right. And there's a lot of times I'm like, yeah, sure, I'm going to give up a little bit of my time because I feel good about this. And I like this person. You know, you feel your way through. And that is why I like being my own boss.
I love it. Jen, we're gonna break for a quick ad break. And then when we get back, I really want to take a deep dive into your new collection. You're doing something really cool, doing a little mixed media thing with leather and denim. So I'm super excited to hear all about that. And we'll dive into that right after the ad break. Welcome back, guys. We're here today with Jen from Tilt Leather. Thank you so much for being with us. So before the break, we mentioned that you were going to go into detail about this new collection that you're working on. And I'm very eager as a fan of yours to hear what it is that you're working on. So do you mind sharing all of the ins and outs of this new collection?
I would love to. So the first time we talked, which who knows about time anymore, but was that a year ago?
Roughly a year ago. You know, it's funny you say that. The first person that was on the podcast just reached out to me, and she's like, oh, it just popped up on my Facebook that a year ago today we did the podcast. I'm like, oh my God, that was a year ago. That's insane. So everything after that, like with Monday Motivation, especially at the beginning, I was really careful to like switch from male to female makers, you know, back and forth. And now it's all scheduling. When people can jump in, they can jump in. I put way too much pressure on myself before. The scheduling process of any podcast is the hardest part. Making everybody happy, it's horrible.
Yeah, I don't envy you, but I'm glad that you're doing it because it's really entertaining to listen to. I really love it. I really love it. So my collection. So when we first talked, I was just really dipping my toes into learning how to make leather garments, because before the pandemic hit, I was on this roll with teaching and also still making and selling online. I was really doing, you know, tooling, belts, wallets, bags, things like that, and which I still absolutely love. But I'd had this thing. I also have a little bit of a sewing background in garments. I just think they're fun. I would did costuming for a while I was performing with my sister. And I was just kind of missing really outrageous, kind of embellished, fun things to wear. And so I had that in my mind, but I never really had the time to explore it when I was full on teaching and making those other products. So when the pandemic hit and I had all this time, I started to teach myself how to work with leather garments. And you know, fabric and leather is kind of similar, but it has different qualities. And so I just really went on this journey. But I was, you know, beginning just doing super simple vests, like three pieces and whatnot. This new collection, that I have. I'm calling it Honeysuckle Rose, which sounds so cheesy, but you know what? Whatever, I'm doing it. I love that movie from the 80s with Willie Nelson and Diane Cannon. It's that perfect like late 70s, early 80s kind of Western wear. It's like.
That sums up your look. I get it now. Like that is like trying to figure out what your look is because it's not, I don't think of it as like Texas, like rodeo wear or anything like that. Like it is the most glamorized Western look. And I'm obsessed with it. Not for me, but for you. Like I couldn't pull off that stuff, but it is, I just admire it because it's so unique and so you, and I love the work that you make. Sorry for interrupting you, but tell us more.
No, that's fine. Casual flair. That's like my favorite casual flair. Like I want to be ready for action at any point, but I want to have a little bit of flair in there. So that's what I'm going for. So this new collection is like really makes me like, it's like, it makes me want to go honky tonkin'. I want to drink a cold beer, but I want to look a little sassy while doing it. And I just love that look from that time period. And I still cannot stop with the Western wear somehow. It's just in me. It needs to come out. I have not exercised that demon yet. So so it's still very like Western heavy, but it's, I'm very proud of it because I learned so much more about construction and really stretched myself in a way that I hadn't done before. I was terrified to make sizes. You know, I'm still not doing custom pieces for people. Like, for instance, if Dolly Parton came in and I had to take her measurements and make something specifically to fit her body, that would terrify me. My skill set isn't there yet, but I am doing a more fitted style vest and a skirt. And I feel really confident about it now. So I feel really proud of the skills I've built in this almost 3 years now of the pandemic. So I'm really excited about that. I feel like the more I dig into it, the more I'm discovering my own style and my own voice. And I just want it to be fun. I just want people, you know, I want them to feel good in it. I want them to feel like they're wearing something that kind of makes them stand out a little bit.
It's naturally going to. Look at the stuff that you're putting out. Like, I think that the way you described it is so good. The way that you say, like, you want to go to a honky-tonk, drink a cold beer. I would add, like, you might get in a bar fight. Like, the stuff that you're wearing is, like, it's so tough and it's so, like... It's like tough flamboyant. And I think that it's
awesome. I love that.
I love it so much. And there's such a flair to it. And as a friend of yours, I would 100% encourage you to keep going in that direction. As much as I love like your tooled belts and all of that kind of stuff, I really think that you've hit a special thing with more of the garments that you do. And something that I want to compliment you on, and we probably brought this up on the last podcast, is the way that you pick models and the way that you show your products to me, I think it's so cool. You use plus size women, you use you know, you have such a good selection of people that you use as models that really work your products so well. And I just think that's cool.
We have a, like, there's just social media has been a real pain in the ass, but also really amazing in that we get connected to people all over the place. Right. And so as far as like choosing models, I just like, I'll reach out to people. Sometimes people reach out to me as well, but I'll just reach out to people and be like, I really love your look. And do you want to do some modeling for me? Or, you know, it's always like this real collaborative exchange. And I love that so much. Like, I also tell people, like, I don't care how you style it. It doesn't have to be Western. It doesn't have to have this certain feel. I want people to get excited about the garment and style it in the way that they want to style it, because I want it to reach a wide audience. And I also would never think to style things in the way that some people have when I just give them the pieces. I just think that that's a beautiful part of the collaboration, and I'm always super stoked about it. And it's a great way to keep widening my circle, to get excited about the pieces in a different way. It's just cool.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that that's such a smart thing to, that's something I've learned too when working with different content creators. There's been times that I try to like overstep their creative like brain, and it never works out. So I would always suggest people research working in your case, a model with me, it's usually celebrities or people like that. Instead of setting up these expectations, give them the products or whatever it is with no expectations, then remember why you picked them to begin with and the reason why they display your products the way that they do. And just like, there's a reason why they're good at what they do, and there's a reason why we're good at what we do.
Right. And there's a reason why you chose them. There's a reason why they caught your eye. So you have to let go of some of the control. Like, I know for me, it's hard to let go of control over my baby, right? My project that I've put so much thought into, to just sort of like let it out there into the world and just go like, okay, what, do whatever you want with it. It's not that hard, but you know, you are relinquishing control over it. And I've not been disappointed.
Right. And I think that it's so spot on where you say like you give them a garment and let them style it the way that they want to. A lot of times we can't see our products more specifically to you because you're real wearable garments. Like you're making something that people are going to wear on the outside. I make wallets where people don't really see it unless they show them off. But we may not know how that person is going to style your garment to what they wear on a daily basis and what that might inspire the people that see your garments. Oh, I can add a vest like that to what I already have. Let me get a vest from her, or let me get a jacket from her. Let me get a skirt to add to this, whatever they already have in their closet. And it creates like layers of depth, and it gives a lot of people creative freedom in the way that they express themselves through the way they dress.
Sure. And then you've just widened your circle to an audience that you might not have even considered. You know what I mean? It's just like, it really works on so many levels. And I, again, it's another way for me to connect with people, so I don't feel like I'm totally alone. And, you know, you feed off of that energy. You know, you get people that are super excited about your product, and you're like, okay, maybe I am on the right path. You know, I still am so insecure about what I do all the time.
We all are. And you know, the cool thing about that too is it might influence you. You might get something of yours out there on somebody, then they do something with it that you didn't even, you couldn't forecast, and it's cooler than what you even thought it could be. And then you're like, oh, that gives me an idea for something else that can be accessorized with the way that they're wearing this. So like, I didn't even expect it to be this. And then it creates a whole like new genre of products or whatever it is that you're making.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really love, you know, because I miss the tooling and all that embellishment, and being able to tool and carve into leather is just a blank canvas. You can put anything in there. I do really miss that. It's hard to incorporate it into clothing. Like, I've done patches. Let's see. So those are tooled leather patches, but you know, natural vegetable tan leather is stiffer. So then I've had to transition out of like tooled patches into, I've really gotten into applique, so like cutting up, you know, small pieces of leather to make an image. So I'm learning how to incorporate that and sort of switch gears into embellishing with leather onto garments. But I do miss my carving. I miss it.
This leads into something very interesting that I wanted to touch bases with you, And it's exactly what we're talking about, how we tell our stories to our clients and to our audience. And how do you do that based off of what we were just discussing? Kind of the way you take your photos, the models that you use, how do you tell your story on a visual platform such as Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, all of the social media aspects that we're sending our products out into?
Yeah, and wow, what a education that's been, right? Like I'm just so caught up in the making and the designing of the project and enjoying that aspect of it. And then like, oh yeah, now I have to do this whole other marketing thing. It's a love-hate relationship. I do try to have fun with it. And it really is great to reach out to other people and have them help you. That's why having models is excellent. Cause like, you know, you're also not just letting go of control, but you're also kind of outsourcing a task, right? But yeah, it's a challenge. I'm constantly reminding myself that it is fun. But yeah, it's a big part of the game.
It's really hard. And I think you nailed it when you said like, oh, we just want to make, and then we have this idea when we're making this, like, oh, people are going to just knock on our door, and then they're going to want to buy the product we just made. And I say this all the time, once you kind of transition from hobbyist, and this is something people really need to consider when they're transitioning from hobbyist into really, really like trying to make money off of this, is that the amount of time that you spend making goes down tremendously. So you have to also enjoy the selling part. And that's the hardest part for me. I always say this, like, I could sell your products all day. I could go to any boutique in the Bay Area and be like, hey, you need to put this stuff in your store. But for us to do that for ourselves is so difficult. And running a marketing campaign through social media, it's the same, except there's more eyes on it. We have more potential customers. If you have 1,000 followers on Instagram, or you have 20,000 followers on Instagram, those are all potential people that are walking into your brick and mortar store that are looking at your product. So it can be really difficult, and it's really draining after we've spent, whether it's 2 hours a day, 3 days, 2 weeks working on one project, staring at it, wrapping our mind around it, to then build even if it's a mini campaign, meaning like you're taking photos, you're editing them, you're working on the copy for the description of whatever you're about to like post on Instagram or anything like that. By that point, you're burnt out on the project and you don't have the same enthusiasm that you did when you were making it. And it's hard to show that, I guess.
I think that, probably all makers can relate to this. And that is, in the middle of a project that you're working on, let alone getting to the end when you have to market it, you're already thinking about the next project that you're excited about working on. And so what I've had to do is restructure my schedule so that I'm fitting in a day or two to just work on social media and content, right? And so I have had to really pare down the projects that I work on. Like I was just planning out projects is what I was doing before. And just like, I want to do this and I want to do that. And this is what I'm going to do next. And I've really had to whittle it down to more focused products, but I actually think it's been good for me to have that focus. So I'm just doing a couple of things, doing them really well, and then getting them out there into the world with a campaign or social media or whatever. So it's made me focus a bit more. And I actually think that's been good for me as a maker. I still, my heart gets really pulled to projects. I always want to jump around, but I'm learning to.
We want to do a million different things. And while, like what you said, while we're working on, something, 10 different ideas come up for the next thing. And I think it's so key what you said, and maybe elaborating on that, like the scheduling thing. I know for me, I I have to work in schedule, like, especially now with the freedom, right? Air quotes, the freedom of working for ourselves. I always say I'm the hardest boss I've ever worked for because I have such a huger demand on myself than working for some Yahoo that is making money off of me.
Yeah, because you care deeply about making it work and about what you're doing. So it's never ending.
Right. So scheduling has been a huge factor. And now my scheduling has changed, and it's being implicated now, but it's going to be really strong during the summer because we live in a desert. So it gets really, really hot here down in Southern California. So my morning time, where I'm the most creative, I've discovered this over the last year and a half. Morning time is where I get the majority of my work done. So getting out here in the shop really early and then working till lunchtime, eating lunch, chilling out for maybe 45 minutes, and then moving into more of the administration side or editing of these podcasts. Like this podcast is becoming like another business in its own sense. Just like the Leather Balm has become its own business. That's more of a weekend thing. Like it is what it is, but learning how to schedule your time is key. I just can't emphasize that enough.
I don't think that stuff innately, I've always been sort of loosey goosey timeline or whatever in my life, just period. But like I have, can't show you because this is an audio podcast, but I, on my wall, I have three dry erase boards, and it's, like just one for ideas or projects that are coming up. I have a monthly one, then I have a daily one. And I am not always that great about keeping up on it, but when I'm plugging that stuff in and I can look at it and there's no guesswork, I have to think about it the night before. All right, what am I doing tomorrow? So I can get up and I can be as productive as possible. With, you know, you gotta be easy on yourself as well. There's gotta be, you have to be flexible. But I too am someone, I do not get up as early as you. I mean, kudos to you. But I am a morning person as well. Like I'm productive in the morning hours. 3 o'clock, I might start to slow down a little bit. But like, I try to get my hard work, like the projects I have to put the most thought into, and physical work in the morning. Then I might turn into like photo editing or video editing or emails or research or whatever I do in the evening. So I have to schedule it that way. But, and you know, it just presents itself. You have to know how you work well. Are you a night person? Are you a morning person? And then you sort of work your schedule around that.
I think that's super important too. And it has to be said that just because this is the way that we function doesn't mean that the time frame works for everyone. It's just, I think the emphasis is on having a schedule and how it's worked for us. And for me, it's about relieving stress. If I can know what I'm doing the next day, I sleep better at night, and it's easier for me to get out of bed. It reminds me of being a kid, and I grew up extremely poor, but every once in a while we would get like a name brand cereal, which didn't happen very often. But when we did, it was like my driving force to get out of bed early, because I was like, man, I'm gonna get like the good Cinnamon Toast Crunch that morning, rather than like cardboard paper and water for breakfast. You know what I mean? So
I do.
I do. So having that incentive of knowing, and I think that regardless, whatever kind of maker you are, whatever level, there's going to be projects that we like more than others. It's going to happen. So having a project that you really are excited about to wake up to the next morning, or maybe your schedule is different and you just so happen to work nights, or you work a full-time job and you come home from work, and then this is your second job, or however it works out to you, kind of having a game plan going into it. I think it just helps out so much, like having a mindset for it.
And you said something that made me think of, I'm sort of switching gears in that, you know, like you said, we all have projects we want to work on more than others. And when there's something that you know you have to get done, you may not be super excited about it. I will like drag my heels, right? So I'm like, you know what? if I'm just going to get into my workflow, I'm going to start with that project that I really want to do just to get me into the workflow. I might then set a timer on myself and say, all right, you have to put that down and pick this up. And inevitably when I get into that project that I may not be as excited about, I'm totally into it because I just enjoy making. But I will dip my toes into the water just to get myself jumping into work with something that I'm excited about working.
Yeah, I think that's super key. And you got to just find what works for you. Like I said, I wish that I could spend 100% of my time making fun little projects for myself, but I can't afford my products. So
I was going to say, when is the last time? What's the last project you made for yourself and when was it?
I love that you brought this up. So to answer your question, then go into the importance of this because it's so important. And I got a new computer, what I'm filming this on. I got a new MacBook. And so I was just as excited to make a laptop sleeve for it, a mouse pad, all of the accessories that I could possibly make to go along with this whole like work area out of leather as I was to get the products, right? The MacBook, like I'm so excited. And so to answer your question, the last thing I made, I was working with this company called Belts Production and they sent me out some really, really nice leather. And I had to come up with a project as an exchange for the leather that they sent me. So I made a really, really nice notebook cover binder type of thing because I realized I can type everything on the computer, but something about scribbling down really fast notes for this podcast, for whatever, the hundreds of things that we do every single day, having something like that, that I'm able to peel out the notebook when it's all full and it's done and put a new one in there, but the case will last forever. I really enjoy those days that, and this is the cure to my burnout. We talk about burnout so much on this podcast. My cure for burnout is because I love leather craft and being a leathersmith so much, I still want to do it. But making something for myself that I don't film is my treat. Even if it's just snapping a photo at the end and just being like, okay, this is what I made. Maybe throw it in an Instagram story or whatever. Something that isn't going to be a part of my catalog. Something I can learn from. That's massive for me. Making something for myself or for my mom or my wife or my mother-in-law, that's how I get back to my passion and love for what I do every single day.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that you're not filming it. It's actually not that big of a deal to like set up the camera and stuff, but it is sort of a disruption in the flow of like, I'm in this moment, I'm not thinking about anything else but this project that's in front of me. Not, is the camera angle right? Is the right lighting right? Do I have this thing on? I don't know. It's small, but it feels significant.
Well, there's so much that goes into filming it. Like you said, when you break it down into the small parts, it's not really that big of a deal. I mean, you can kind of move your camera on a small tripod wherever you want it to. But for me, then I have to pause my music so that I don't pick up the sound. I got to make sure that the dogs aren't going crazy, that the gardeners aren't here, that the neighbor who you would think has a house on Better Homes and Gardens because all they do is use the air blower all day long. I'm like, what is your deal, man? Like, I've seen your backyard. You're just blowing dirt around. Like, why are you doing this? Or, you know, just the normal life things where you have to plan out and execute a good production. If you're going to do a good one, it has to be planned out. And if you can throw all of that away and turn on some good music that you really like, and there's something different about that. And that's my treat, where I'm like, I don't have any time expectations. I don't have to appease any clients. I'm just trying to make the best product that I can for myself that
right. And you don't have to worry about it, about trying to sell it.
Yeah.
It's not like, who's this going to speak to? Hey, it's speaking to me.
Right. Exactly. And it might spark, one of those might like spark someone that normally wouldn't buy from you and think like, oh, this is cool. I didn't even know you made anything like this. And I don't, but I can for you if you want.
Totally. I did make myself, I started to make myself about 5 months ago. And I got the tooling done. I just like need to diet. That's it. But somehow it just got like so pushed back. I just need to diet and attach the buckle and I'm done.
I thought you said I need to diet. Like you need to go on a diet before you can finish. Oh. And I'm like, whoa, easy. Like give yourself a break.
You know what?
Break.
I mean, maybe. That's I don't know. I haven't tried it on for six months.
I think that's super funny. But I want to step back a little bit to what we were just discussing. And it's a hard thing to bring up, but I think it's super valuable. And I think that we can, as the maker community, learn a lot from this. No one wants to talk about it, but it's money. And it's a hard, hard conversation to have. But how do you set your prices? How are you able to know what you're going to charge? Is it material cost plus time plus whatever? Is it, for me, it's very different, and I'll keep it short in the way that I charge. I charge very simply because a lot of the materials I use are sponsored materials. So people want me to use their leather or their tools and all of that stuff at this point. But the way that I charge for my stuff is, how much would I be willing to not make to keep this product? Does that make sense to you?
It does. Yeah.
I think that comes from my artist background in fine art. Whatever it is, tattooing, it's different. You charge by the hour and it's hard. You know what I mean? But what I'm making is art every single day. So if I charge somebody $600 for a wallet, to me, that's the value that I find in keeping the wallet for myself.
Mm-hmm. It still feels, that is probably the hardest and thing I dislike the most. And I feel like a lot of makers would feel that way. Pricing stinks. I think like I am not someone who buys luxury goods. I'm like a thrift store shopper, you know. So for me, I always think about like, what would I pay? But that's also, I also don't represent a large swath of consumers. There are people who do want, I'm not saying that I'm selling luxury goods, but who will pay a higher price.
Wait, hold on real quick, because I disagree with you. And I think it's super important that we discuss this. You are selling luxury goods. As soon as you start working with premium materials and mm-hmm. you're creating an artisan bespoke product, you are a luxury product because even though we may not be our own target market, like I always say, I can't afford my products. We're not selling to ourselves. You're not selling to makers. You're selling to a certain audience of people that have money. If you're buying real leather goods, not genuine leather, but like that you would get from some, you know, cheap department store, but something that someone makes out of premium materials, that is a luxury product. We all make, anyone that listens to this that makes out of leather, wood, metal, anything like that, we're creating a luxury good because there's other options at a lower price point that's mass produced. And that's not
you're right. You're right. When you put it into that context, you're absolutely right. So, I mean, just to go back to the pricing, I think that was my mindset in the beginning of like, well, I would never pay that much. So I better lower my price, even though I keep in mind the cost of my supplies. I throw in some shipping in there, of course, my time. Where I'm always cutting it, but so I still do think like, okay, this is what I should actually be charging for this item. Ooh, that seems a little much. I might peel back on what I pay myself at an hourly rate, you know? So that's where I make my adjustments, but I am starting to charge what my items are really worth, you know.
Good.
And I feel more confident in my, but it still makes me very nervous. Like this latest line, the leather costs a lot. The skirt takes up a lot of material. It really is more supply costs. But I'm charging what I should be charging, and I'm terrified.
You know what? I'm going to tell you from my experience, just switching my price tier this last year. So once I raised my prices, I made more money. I sold almost the same amount of products, but I started paying myself what I felt it was deserved, what I was deserved, because after material cost, after shipping, after not just shipping, but packaging materials, like everything that goes into it. I mean, I think there's a misconception, and I don't think that we're talking to our clients with this podcast. I think that we're talking to our peers, and that's what's important.
It's okay that clients know. They might want to know. Maybe they should know. I mean, I don't factor in. I go and I personally pick out all of my hides, because I'm 20 minutes away from the supplier. So I'm driving back and forth, and that is, hours out of my time plus gas money. And I'm not complaining. I'm just saying this is how it is, but I don't even factor in that.
Boils down.
It does boil down. And the reason why I have to charge what I should be charging is because I wasn't making any money. I was like, what am I doing? I'm working so hard. I'm barely making any money, just because I wanted to make this product more accessible to people. And I also was not valuing what I was doing. And so I'm doing it. I'm crossing my fingers. I'm trying to relay through my marketing and maybe even my verbiage on my description of my pieces, the work that goes into it and the care and the love. So, you know,
I think that people that have, and I'll just use basic math, people that have the money to buy something at $200 also have the money to buy it at $300, and they're going to find more value and take better care of it if you charge $300. It goes back to my analogy between like Mercedes and Hondas. If I saved up the money to buy a Mercedes, and I don't even like Mercedes, so I'll say BMW, I like it better. So if I were to buy a BMW, I would take care of that car a lot better than if I bought a Honda. That's just a fact, because we work harder to obtain those things. And I think it's really important that people realize the hidden cost in being a maker. It's not just buying a hide. You're very fortunate that you're able to go to your supplier and pick out hides, but not everyone is privy to that. I'm very fortunate that of my circumstance as well. But there's times that if you order and it gets shipped to you, there's a huge gash in the middle of it, or there's barbed wire scarring or a branding or discolorization or like inconsistencies in thickness. And guess who eats that cost? You do, because you can't use that portion of the leather. Or we're human beings, we're hand making stuff. There's mistakes that happen. We got to factor. I think that that's where things change for makers. And this is kind of more after you've gone from the hobbyist to now it's a business, and there's massive learning pains or growing pains in those first couple years, that there's so many hidden costs. Once you start factoring those in and start charging accordingly for those, your clients will respect you more. I just think that it really plays a big factor.
People have, I've heard that for years, but I don't think I was confident yet enough in my skill set. And I just thought like, oh, I can't go there yet. But people have been saying that for years, you charge this higher price, and like, there is some an element of respect there. But on my end, I'm like, well, I better deliver. Make sure this thing is, yeah, I better deliver. But that's fine. I mean, the thing about leather work that has taught me something innately that I do not have, which is patience. And because the material cost is so expensive, and if you screwed up, there's really not a way to, there might be a workaround, but for the most part, you might have just ruined that piece of leather. So I've learned to take my time and do it right and pay attention. And it's made me a better maker for sure. And it, not just with leather, but like I've noticed, because I did sew on fabric before, now I'm a better seamstress because of my leather work. because I'm very careful about each step.
It's really interesting that you say that. When you start charging more than you naturally, if you have a soul and you're a decent person, you're going to naturally take more time and effort knowing that somebody is spending more money on your product. That happened to me prior, but now even more so. I add more to the package deal now that I raise my prices, and that's something as simple as once someone places an order, I contact them. I contact them through a phone call, or even better, like a video call, and I work hands-on with them, spend an hour or two to get to know them and get to know what their expectations are for a project. And that immediately changes everything. And then when I'm working on a project, I know that they're paying premium prices. So it's up to me, because I have pride in my work, to deliver. And I did this before, but subconsciously you do it more when you know people are spending more on your projects, and it makes you a way better maker in whatever medium that you're working in, because we're paid so little, it boils down to that. We value money more. So because of that, we treat people's money that they paid on us with more value. So we put more love and care, and more importantly than anything else, time. So I added, if a wallet takes me 3 days to make, I added an extra day onto that for my time schedule. So in the long run, I'm not making a whole bunch more money, but the customer is getting a way better product because of the time that I invest into each project.
I also think that communication is so key in getting the consumer excited about the process. Like, just, it's a reminder, like, this is handmade for you. And I even like to, I always, regardless of what it is, if someone purchases something from me online, I immediately say, hey, thanks so much for this purchase. I'll start work on it tomorrow, or whatever. Just like an introduction.
Give them a timeline. Like, hey,
give a little bit of a timeline, but also like, hey, like, this is a person behind this product. It's not mass produced. It's just me. And it's personal. And then if it's a bigger project, time-wise, or even like monetarily, if it's a higher price tag, I might even send progress pictures just as something super quick, just as like, it gets people super stoked about it and excited. And it's a reminder that this is handmade for them.
I think that is so cool. Getting your clients involved in the process as much as you can is part of that package deal. And it reminds them that they're working with a person and not a big name brand. So I love doing the same thing. I take progress photos and I post those progress photos on my story and mention that individual on that story post throughout the whole thing. And one, it informs them, gets them excited, knowing that while they're at work or while they're taking their kids to school, I'm sitting, spending time working on their project. Also, it gives them an opportunity to share your work with their friends. So it's real easy for people.
Yeah, you just widened the circle.
Yeah, well, they just have to put like repost or whatever. And then they're doing the marketing for you. It's just, my brain is wired that way to think about get the most bang out of your buck.
It's exactly. And it's mutually beneficial for everyone. It gets them excited about their project. You just widened the circle and reached another group. A lot of my sales I have an Etsy shop as well as my website. And so a lot of people on Etsy aren't following me on Instagram. So I will send them a link to my Instagram, say like if I've chosen to take their project and do a how-to or a process video. Now I've just got someone from my Etsy onto my Instagram, which can lead to more work or more followers or whatever that might be. So I'm always thinking about ways to like draw all those ties in together. And I enjoy it. I enjoy it.
Well, talking about money is a really difficult thing. It's something that's almost taboo. But in order for us to be able to help others, we need to kind of take those risks and discuss those things. And I really appreciate you kind of allowing yourself to venture into that, because it can be difficult and it's a struggle for all of us. I think that's the key, that if you're struggling with this and you're listening at home, even people in our situations that do this full time, we struggle with it. And it is a very, very hard thing to raise our prices. We're not trying to become rich. We just need to be able to continue, like keep working. That's all it is. We're charging so we can buy materials for the next project. We're not selling on yachts. We're not, you know, going to country clubs. We're just paying for our next project because we're financing our dream, essentially.
For sure. And you can't really talk about that a lot on your social media platforms, because like consumers don't really want it. They don't really want to know that. I mean, I think there's a clever way to relay how much work and time you're putting into this, but it's stressful. I mean, that is the biggest stressor for me. How can I keep doing this thing that I love and making even like just a small, like just making it, just making, being, making enough to pay my bills, really. And yeah, it just adds stress, but I'm willing to do it. I'm willing to work hard and do whatever I can because I don't want to work for somebody else. And I really, really enjoy this. And I feel like, if I can bring something to someone that makes them happy, my job is done. You know, I enjoyed making it. You're enjoying it out in the world. Awesome. Let's do some more.
Something that's unique from everyone that I've discussed as makers, none of us make a lot of money. I don't think that until we start, I mean, I hope, I'm going to be very transparent. Like I hope to make this into like a global business. It's like a household business for, or a household name for me. Like that is my dream. I hope to one day either hand it off to one of my kids, my nephews or nieces, or sell it for, you know, $500 million like that. I have huge aspirations. But in the meantime, right now, my goal is to not go work for somebody else. That's it. Like, and everyone makes a lot of money in jobs that they hate so that they can spend their money on things that make them happy and things that they enjoy. If we're doing things that make us happy and doing things that we enjoy, the rest of the money is just to pay for utilities, gas, food, a roof over our house, clothes to wear, then you're happy. You've already taken care of what people spend their whole life working to obtain, which is happiness. And we get to do that every single day. I'm happy every single morning that I get to come out here and work. There's days that are better than others, and there's days that are not as good as others. So that's just a fact of life. But if you're happy, you're doing the right thing. And I think that that's what's important.
For sure. And I love this so much that in fact, I have a hard time leaving it. I have a hard time leaving the work because first of all, I always think that there's something I need to be doing to be pushing this forward to be, you know, yes, I am in charge of my own schedule. I can go to lunch right now if I want to do, but should I? But I also really love the work. So now I'm just like, I'm super driven in getting the work done. I don't want to say to a detriment, but I don't do a lot of things, you know?
We do what we love. We're already doing what we love. I think that that's the point, is a lot of people work to be able to spend their free time doing what we get to do, and we get to do it. And not everyone's in our position, we got to acknowledge that, but
or want to be in that position.
This isn't everyone's joy. Like, and I get that. My joy isn't a lot of this. Some people like to spend their time doing different things. It just so happens that us makers enjoy what it is that we're doing. And I can completely relate to what you're saying, is that it's hard for me to leave. Like, there's always a reason for me to come out here, some small thing, even if it's just to come out here to clean the shop so it's nice and ready in the morning, or get a drawing ready for the next day. Like, I'm in a relationship, like you're in a relationship. We have to take into consideration our partners, our families, like the people that want to spend time with us as well, and not become hermits in our own world, because that's also not healthy too. Like, we got to give ourselves a break.
Yeah. And that's something like, during the pandemic, what I learned is that, I'm just like, I'm going to dig in. I have this time. I'm going to really make this work. And I'm so determined that when I do leave, I feel guilty about it. but that also was putting me in this really weird headspace. You know, sometimes I wasn't even like leaving the house because I work out of my home, and I had to force myself to go out and take morning walks. And I just felt much lighter. And you also are more creative. Like, you know, makers will, you know, that you can't create when you're in a weird headspace. It's very difficult. So, but it is hard for me to pull away because I do feel the guilt. Like I said, speaking of schedules, I said I was going to do this week. And if a friend calls or a family says they want to do something and I take that day off, I really have to go like, you know what, just let it go. Like it's okay. Then get up early tomorrow or whatever it is. But I do feel that pain of a thinking that I'm like shirking my responsibilities.
Well, you acknowledging that says a lot about your maturity as a maker, that you're able to address it and know what's actually happening. So once you know what is actually happening, you're better equipped to make those decisions. I'm the same way. Like I feel guilty if I take a Sunday off and I'm like, it's Sunday, I need a time to like do chores around the house or just go to lunch with my wife or go see what's happening in the real world. Like get inspired by things outside of my shop, because otherwise you become a hermit and you become isolated. And that is, if you're anything like me, somebody that struggles with mental health, is the absolute worst thing that you can do. And you need to force yourself out of that position, because once you take that little bit of time outside of your work area, when you come back to your work area, you're going to be so much more productive and motivated. It's like a relationship. I always say this, like absence makes the heart grow fonder. I'm going to Atlanta to visit my brother and sister-in-law, I don't know, May or something like that. And part of me is so bummed because I know it's a week away from my shop, but the last time I did it, I came back so much more motivated and creative and more passionate that I'm like, man, when you're in your shop or in your workspace, you don't even get to appreciate the smell of it because you're in it all the time. But when you take time away, you get to experience that smell and that feeling that everyone mentions when they come into your work area.
And what a great feeling to really want to get back to work. I mean, those are the life goals, right? Like to really get excited about what you're doing. And then on the flip side of that, because sometimes it is hard to leave your workspace, when you get out there and you know you've been working hard and you're going to go and visit your friends or family, whatever you're doing, that feels really good too. Cause you're like, oh yeah, I needed this. Like I drug my heels leaving the studio, but now that I'm out of it, this is awesome too. And I've worked hard and I've earned it. So it feels really sweet. And then you're like excited to get back to work. It's a win-win.
It's a win-win. And I think specifically for me or and yourself, whoever, like I spend so much time within the maker community talking about what we just talked about so much that it's really nice to go talk to people, not about what I do every single day. Like my brother-in-law, love him to death. Like I know that I'm not going to be asked questions about general question. Hey, how's the business going? How's things going? You know, like those types of things. But that's it. It's not about the day in, day out. Like, oh, what kind of, stitching irons are you using? Or what kind of this or that? Like, and it's nice because I don't feel like I have to show up and perform. Like I can just be with my nephew and my niece and I can go eat good Southern food and go see cool things that I haven't seen before. It takes you out of the element so much. And it's really nice. I enjoy it a lot.
Yeah, me too. In fact, I'm leaving right now. No.
Good. Well, you know what? That's actually a good outro then. I've had a blast hanging out with you. We're going to have you back on. Maybe we'll get your dad. We'll do a combo.
Oh my God, he would die.
Next time you go visit or he's there visiting you. I would love, even if it's just like a little bonus thing, I would just love to talk to him. He seems so cool. So
totally. We got to get my mom on there too, Kathy, because, I really think you'd enjoy them both. But wait, before we go, this is totally an unsolicited plug, but I have to tell you how much I love the Leather Balm.
Oh, thank you.
Seriously, people listening, It is the shit. It's been my favorite. I've had, of course, I've been working with leather for 12 years. I've tried many, many different kinds. And this stuff has been my favorite. I've been recommending it to so many people because I put it on my boots when you sent me some. I put it on my boots. And boots still look amazing. And I have not tried any other product that has really like sunk in there and lasted. They look great.
It's Thank you.
So good.
Jen, and it feels good. I appreciate that.
Oh, I mean it. It feels good on my hands too. And it's all natural.
And it's simple. And it's made, like I always say, like, let me make the mess. That way you don't have to. Like I started making it because I wanted to make my own leather balm. I wanted to make something that I've tried a bunch of them. And what I liked was like a thicker, stiffer, like more wax based leather balm. And I was unable to find that extreme of what I wanted. So I just made a small one. And I realized, like, in order to make a small one, like one can worth of stuff, it makes no sense. So I need to make a bigger batch, even if it's just for myself. And I kind of was talking amongst friends, like, oh, well, send me some, whatever. I want to check it out. And I'm like, of course, like, that's what we do in this community. And then they liked it. And then I'm like, cool, I'm doing this. Like, I just jumped in 100%.
It is so great. And there's also something about, it's just the right consistency. You know, like you said, you like it a little bit waxy, but it's not goopy. So it applies really well and evenly. You know, sometimes you'll put a product on and all of a sudden you've got this big dark spot. Like, this applies really nicely. Like, you've hit something there. I'm so impressed.
And it's not just that. It's a polish. I think that's what people don't really get out of their leather balms. It's not just a conditioner or a protective, but it's very Mr. Miyagi, like wax on, wax off. And it creates this incredible like shine that takes average leather and makes it feel immediately premium. And that's something that I wanted for myself. So why, like, I'm not somebody that hoards things to myself. I'm very generous person. I'll share everything with everyone to my own detriment, unfortunately, but it's just something that I wanted to do. And it's crazy because it's another product I really don't make money off of. It's just something I want to share with the community between like the packaging. I use premium cans for it. Like, I'm doing 4 ounce, not 2 ounce, but I keep the price point at like what I would charge for a 2 ounce, plus packaging. Like, packaging is a huge thing for me, and the cost to package that and ship it, I'm not making any money, but that's not important. Like you said, not yet. Like, and I do it because I enjoy it. To me, to take a day out of the week to whip up some like leather balm out here in my shop, like in a crock pot, it's really handmade for leathersmiths by a leathersmith. Like, I'm very transparent in that. And to me, it's super like relaxing to not, I get to be in my workspace, but I'm not like working with leather. I'm making, it's like cooking almost. And I love cooking.
It's all, yeah, it's just another under the umbrella of leather work. It's something that you can do that sort of takes you out of what you're normally doing, but you're still under that umbrella. It's, you know, it's a creative in a way. It's fun when you can kind of switch it up a little bit, but it's also, it's a really useful, amazing product. And I want everyone to get out there and get it. Yeah. Plus, I will say the packaging, so fun to get. It was beautiful.
I want it to be an experience. I want people to open it like and be like, wow, should I be using this? Because it's packaged so well. Like, it comes, I don't know, like packaging, Apple ruined it for all of us. Like, once Apple came out with their packaging, like, now your packaging game has to be on point or whatever. Like,
it's an experience. Or whatever. Yeah.
Like, yeah, people remember that experience. But speaking of plugging people, one, thank you for giving an honest, you know, kind of review and testimonial to the product. I appreciate that. That was not scripted in this podcast,
by the way, guys. I am not paid.
I want you to plug yourself. Where can we find your work? Where can people go and support you in your endeavors? And where can people go purchase products from you?
Tiltleather.com. That's my website, TILT stands for tiny, intricate little things. Because that's how I like to work, real small. So you can, the best place is to find me on my website. You can sign up for newsletters. I always try to, I do a monthly newsletter with always a little bonus, extra something, plus things that I'm interested in listening to or watching or recipes. I always try to throw a little something kind of fun in there just to keep engaged with the community. You can also follow me on Instagram, and my handle is Tilt Leather, where you can see sort of my day-to-day, what's happening, process videos. Yeah, those are my two major platforms. I mean, I'm on Etsy, but you might as well go to my website. And just, you know, I'm always trying to do something fun and something new and exciting and different.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely, we'll put the links to both your website and your Instagram. Like you said, I'm sure you'd rather people go direct to your website rather than shop through Etsy, because they take a cut and we deserve our money. Give us our money, Etsy. But yeah, I really appreciate you being on here. It takes time, and your time is valuable, and you're valuable to me. You're my friend, so I appreciate you.
I feel the same. I love our conversations. It's really great to just chat with you, catch up, and I can't wait to watch and hear more of these interviews. They're really fun.
Absolutely. And I know your parents will be listening, so shout out to them. I appreciate
Bill and Kathy them. Awesome. Next time you're That's on right. guest stars.
That's, I love them. I love them. Do you have any advice through your period as a maker that you might be able to offer somebody new into what we do as makers? Mm-hmm. Any kind of like last bit of advice?
Just keep working. I mean, I think it's pretty simple. There's so many highs and lows that never really goes away, or at least it hasn't for me, but perseverance. Keep creating, keep making, keep doing the work. Don't be afraid to change up your work habits, your product. Just go for what is interesting to you and find your own voice is what I would say. Find your own style, be true to yourself. And I mean, that sounds so.
No, it's on point. It's on point. I think that some people.
Sounds cliche, but it really is true. Don't be afraid to be outrageous, really. The more you can set yourself apart from the crowd, the easier it's going to be for you to be found and for people to get interested in you. So don't do what everyone else is doing. Follow your true voice.
Yeah. You got to enjoy what you're doing. And like you said, do the work. That's the part that people forget sometimes. You get what you put into it. So if you're not willing to work 16 hours a day, seven days a week, you're going to get you're going to reap what you sow. So if you put a little bit of effort into it, you're going to get a little effort out. Nothing magically happens for any of us. None of us get blow up overnight without putting the work in first. So
yeah,
got to work.
Work it out.
Work it out. That's right. I feel like you're the Beyonce of leathercraft. So work it. There you go. Fringe. I love it. Thank you so much, Jen. I appreciate you coming on the show. We'll have you back on. And everyone that's listening, please like, subscribe, follow, and share this with at least one of your friends. I would really, really appreciate it. And that what kind of spreads the word. We're putting a lot of work into this podcast for you guys. And I would appreciate it. Until next week, you guys have a great week, and thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next time. See ya.
Bye, everybody.
Seen a lot of change, been through a lot of pain. Some things are not the same as they were a year ago, but all will be okay. I move on each and every day. The past is where it stays, way back a year ago.